This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Political pressure from within the Republican Party may have led the state Senate to approve a modified tax package yesterday. The bill rolled out a few weeks ago by Senate leader Phil Berger and Finance Committee co-chair Bob Rucho included reductions in personal corporate income tax, as well as a huge expansion in sales tax. Critics said the sales tax piece was too much and would land on the backs of the poor. Now it appears Berger, at least, is backing off. He offered a new plan that passed yesterday. This one eliminates the sales tax expansion. It flattens personal income tax rates and gradually gets rid of corporate income tax altogether. Well, that angered fellow Republican Bob Rucho, who resigned his co-chairmanship of the Senate Finance Committee. Jessica Jones is here now. She's our WUNC Capital Bureau chief, and she has much, much more. Welcome, Jessica. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank.
Tell us about this Senate tax package that passed yesterday.
Well, the Senate tax package that passed yesterday was very different from Senator Rucho's plan. So the newer plan that's advocated by President Phil Berger of the Senate is now a little bit closer to the House's plan. And so in very, very general terms, it would impose a flat income tax rate. It would phase out corporate income and business franchise taxes and repeal the estate tax. But the sales tax base would not be expanded to the degree that it would have been under Rucho's plan. And that really is the sticking point. When you look at both plans in a nutshell, what Senator Rucho really wanted to do was expand the sales tax base to something like between 130 and 160 services.
Yeah, that's so a couple of keys in that. Expanding sales tax to include services which hadn't been really the case in the state of North Carolina. Rucho's plan, many more services, but also would increase the sales tax from 2 to 6.5% on food and medicine, and that was another part that had people pretty upset.
That was another part that had people pretty upset, but I think we have to remember that tax reform, if you're talking about tax reform for the entire state of North Carolina, this is a very complicated, very difficult endeavor. A lot of people right now are looking at what's going on in the General Assembly, and they're saying, you know, you really can't do this well in 2 weeks. There are a million and one different ways to do it. What Senator Rucho said was that we need to expand the sales tax on more services and more things if we're going to lower the corporate and personal income taxes, because we have to have money coming in from somewhere. But that's not as popular. Of course, it just depends on the scale. Are you going to charge more on taxes on goods and services, or are you going to charge more on higher earners and corporations at the other end of the scale? And there are a lot of gradations in between. But
of course, it was the regressivity, because everybody has to buy food, so poor people would pay a disproportionate amount of their income. Every time they go to the grocery store, wealthier folks have all the food and all the flat screen TVs they're ever going to buy. And so their money's going to a different place. So that was a big part of the sales tax piece anyway. That's changed. And that's in part what the governor and Tom Tillis, who was the House majority leader, they had actually campaigned on that kind of a tax package, much different than the Senate package. So talk about the politics involved in this.
Well, they campaigned on tax reform. I remember the governor saying on the campaign trail, we'd like to lower corporate and personal income taxes, make the state more business friendly. Or I think really in particular, he talked a lot about the corporate taxes. Basically, there were very general campaign promises made both by the governor and by Speaker of the House Tom Tillis. And so I don't think politicians really want to go back on it. And also Senate President Phil Berger doesn't want to be seen as a laggard and doesn't want to be seen as the odd man out, you know, come campaign time, whenever that rolls around again. So I think that the politics of it is playing a really big role in trying to get this huge, enormous, enormous task that probably should require months and months, if not even a few years of thought. So they want to get it done before July 1st, which is the start of the new fiscal year.
Governor already signaled he favored the House plan, so it was pretty clear what was going to end up going through and being signed.
That's
so
right.
That's the writing on the wall. Let's talk a little bit more about the politics, though. Tom Tillis has already announced he's challenging Kay Hagan for her seat in the Senate, so he's going to look at that Republican nomination for Senate. What about Phil Berger? Is he considering anything like that, and could that kind of politics looking ahead to the next Senate race be part of what's going on here?
Well, previously the buzz was that Senate President Phil Berger was considering it. He had released a kind of a biographical video of himself at some point. It was several months ago, so it was pretty clear that he was thinking about it. But I think right now Tom Tillis really is out front. He's there's a lot of money behind him. He's clearly very interested, and he's announced that he is going to run against Kay Hagan. So I think that's, you know, that's who we're seeing at this point.
So the first thing you do is you look at an income plan. How much money do we project we will make based on your income package? That's what we would call the tax package. Then there's the budget, how much you're going to spend. House has already passed the budget. The Senate is considering one. Let's talk about the House first. Give us the highlights of the House budget.
So the highlights of the House budget, I mean, very, very generally, are that the House's budget would spend $20.6 billion for the fiscal year, which, of course, starts on July 1st. Budget writers say that their plan fully funds Medicaid. It adds 5,000 pre-kindergarten seats, and it includes compensation for survivors of the state's eugenics program. And the difference between the House and Senate budget plans, just in terms of the dollars, really isn't that great. So the difference between the two plans is just $12 million next year, but they do have some philosophical differences.
Let's talk about those between the House and the Senate.
I would say, I mean, again, just from a bird's eye perspective, the House is more focused on K through 12 education, and I think that's probably also partly a political decision, because it is better if you are running for the Senate if you try to throw some bones toward public education and teachers. The Senate version of the budget is more focused on the university system. They give more, there are fewer cuts to the university system than the House. So that's a very general view of it.
But. So overall, there are cuts. There will be layoffs projected in both budgets, right? Make a comparison there.
There are cuts in both budgets. So the Senate wants to eliminate teacher tenure in the public schools. So there are some cuts that could happen there. But then the Senate would spend $53 million more on the University of North Carolina system than the House does. So, you know, potentially whatever happens, there could be cuts at the university system. It's hard to say at this point, but That's generally what we would expect.
And overall, both tax packages project cuts in state spending over the next several years. There will be reductions in overall state spending.
Well, lawmakers really aren't really laying that out. When you ask them that question, they say, well, we need to get the tax reform question finished first before we can finish up our budget. And mind you, of course, this all has to happen before July 1st. So, you know, it's like we are on a high-speed train going at 1,000 miles an hour here with all these things that are so important for the future of the state. But that's one of the reasons why Speaker Tom Tillis has said, let's get the tax reform package taken care of before we work out our budget, because we need to know how much money have we got. So,
and of course, there are a lot of little things. We talk about sales tax and taxes on services, personal income tax, corporate. Those are the things we can talk about because they're digestible. There are all kinds of little loopholes, tiny, tiny little, huge for some industries, huge for some businesses and individuals. And yet that's in the minutiae of these bills and both packages that I guess are going to be on the table and probably the focus of some argument over the next month. Right.
That's right. Well, there are a lot of policy proposals within both budgets, and I think a lot of people were surprised that there were so many. But those could be used as bargaining points. You know, it could be that at some point a lot of those items would be stripped out of one budget proposal or another just in order to get it done or to make a big compromise. So we'll just have to see how that part of it works out.
And of course, when we're talking about state politics, it's great to say that you're going to cut taxes. Everybody's happy with that. But then when you start laying people off, it becomes a political problem, particularly if you're running for statewide office. And that's, of course, what Tom Tillis is looking at. So if you're safe in a Republican district that's been pretty much configured to remain Republican for quite some time, you can say almost anything. Looking ahead to a statewide office, now you have to have a slightly different view of the overall impact on the state, not just cutting taxes, but will we be laying people off in various districts around the state?
Well, I think the other thing about tax reform is that you know, one way or another, if a tax reform bill does get passed, and I think we don't know absolutely if it will yet, that has very, very far-reaching consequences. I mean, it would take some time to see how things would settle out. But, you know, the fact is, if you don't have enough money coming in, counties, for example, and municipalities are going to have to get that money from somewhere. So there is a possibility that depending on how this all shakes out, you know, municipalities may have to raise some sales taxes or property taxes could go up. I know county commissioners are very worried about proposals in both budgets to, you know, to lower the corporate and personal income taxes. And if there isn't as broad of a base of a sales tax as some people would like, then you do have to ask yourself, where's the money going to come from? So it does. It is going to have to come from somewhere.
A lot of moving parts. Cities and counties rely on state funding. If that gets cut, as you say, the taxes. So if I'm a taxpayer in the state of North Carolina, my state taxes went down, my county and local taxes went up. On the other hand, there have been states where when that happened at the state level, they passed a ban and said, no, we're not going to allow counties and localities now to pass on the rates.
Well, all I can say is politically, I think it is going to be very interesting to see what lies ahead in the next year or two, because people get very upset when you try to raise their taxes, especially if they're property taxes, especially if they're local sales taxes on certain items. So we'll just have to see what happens.
All right. Well, we'll see, and we'll take a look and try to project what might happen in the state of North Carolina with the various tax and budget proposals making their way through the legislature. Our conversation continues about tax reform and the state budget. Right now, Jessica Jones is with us, WNC Capital Bureau Chief. We'll talk with an economist, a couple of people who have looked very closely at these budget and tax proposals, and talk more about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacia. We're talking about North Carolina tax reform plans and the state budget. With us, Jessica Jones, WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief. Joining us now is Brent Lane. He is with the Frank Hawkins Keenan Institute of Private Enterprise at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Brent, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be here with you.
Also with us, Alexandra Forter-Sirota. She is Director of the Budget and Tax Center at the North Carolina Justice Center. Alexandra, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Let me start with you and get your let's talk about the Senate tax reform plan now, the revised package. How does that look to you? Give us your take on that.
Well, I would say that this is not, in fact, a modest proposal. I would say that this is, once again, a shift using a flat sales personal income tax rate and really reducing the taxes for the wealthiest North Carolinians and profitable corporations. At the same time, like the other plans, it does put at risk our public investments, because we know from the fiscal note produced by Fiscal Research that over time, the state will be bringing in less dollars than it would under current tax law. And that's a problem when we know that we need to be investing in educating our children and making sure our communities are safe and healthy.
Brent, you've been consulting on these packages. What's your take on this?
What the Senate has approved is less tax reform than it is simply a tax cut. Many of the basic elements that would go into a solid tax reform, which would include extending the base of sales tax to include services while lowering the rate, are absent from this plan.
Like what?
Well, like extending the sales tax to cover the services.
There are, right.
there are certain fundamentals that have been agreed upon for a comprehensive tax reform package, although there's been differences over time. But it is summarized by broaden the base and lower the rate. It is summarized by simplicity and transparency, removal of exemptions and special treatments. Much of that remains, assuming the Senate plan is adopted. That's disappointing from an economic standpoint. I can see how it may be more satisfactory from a political standpoint than some of the other plans that were advanced.
Well, the Ruggio plan did two things that are changed in this proposal that I want to focus on. I'm sure there are a number of things, but the two things are the Ruggio plan had a broader base. More services would have been taxed than in the current Senate plan that was just approved. But the other thing was the sales tax, the sales tax increase on food and medicine. First of all, how effective is that? I mean, that seemed to be a highly regressive tax and one that really raised a lot of hackles on the part of opponents. Let's start with the increase in the sales tax on food and medicine. Is that a good idea?
Well, the increase in sales tax on food and medicine was consistent with a strategy to focus more on tax base from consumption through the sales tax than through income, which from an economic standpoint is a sound approach by many measures.
But when you look at the impact and who pays
proportionally. Provided you acknowledge the inherent regressivity in that change. Certainly the characterization of this as a tax shift is also accurate.
Right.
And I think Senator Ruggio and some of his colleagues were aware that that was going to be the effect and were looking for ways to offset it, both within the tax cut through some income exclusions and also beyond the tax cut in other areas of public policy.
So income exclusion would be one, but the state's ready to let the earned income tax credit, for instance, which is a direct payment to low-wealth individuals and families, they're going to let that sunset. I mean, that would be one of those offsets that was not about to happen, right?
Well, one of the observations I think needs to be recognized about our tax code is that even when it was progressive, the results for our citizens in income was regressive. We've had a declining economy and a declining personal income and household income since we peaked in 1997. And that's despite a relatively progressive tax code. That suggests that perhaps the tax code is a poor solution to the inherent regressivity of our economy in the state.
Now, the other part of that is the broader base, and that was also lost. The Rucho plan taxed more services. That's lost, and you're saying that in a sense, that's what make this less tax reform and more just a tax cut.
I would say it is a tax cut, not tax reform. Perhaps tax reform provided the umbrella for this tax cut plan.
So, Alexandra, let me talk with you. What are some of the priorities in both the House and the Senate budget? And that's what that is. They're telling you what the state thinks are the most important things in this state that we need to fund. How do those priorities look to you? And what if you don't agree with them and you think there should be other priorities, where should they be? What deserves more funding?
Well, again, I think as we've talked about, the tax proposals really make it clear that there is a willingness to provide a massive tax cut that's largely going to benefit wealthy folks and profitable corporations, again, at the expense of public investments and the foundation for what we think will generate the economic growth we need. We certainly see in both the spending side of the House and Senate plans an effort to look at the Medicaid budget and put money there. Certainly an important investment to be making. We certainly need to make sure that folks can have access to health insurance. That's critical. But all of the budgets proposed so far still fall far short of where we were pre-recession. They still are failing to keep up in critical areas with what would be needed to maintain current service levels. So we know in education, our student population is growing. The cost of delivering education is growing. Our investments are not keeping pace with that. We're falling behind, and that's a problem. So there are areas and important investments that are being made, but because of the tax cut, there certainly are reductions that don't need to be happening, and there are choices within the budget.
Such as?
So, for example, we don't see fully funding teachers' assistance. We see, and that will have an impact on the classroom experience of students.
Classroom size is going to go up. We've lifted the lid on the classroom size at the lower grades, which is directly correlated to outcomes in terms of improvement and also the dropout rate. So you're going to pay that price down the line. You got to know that going in. Right.
That's right. And I think the area of economic development, since we're talking about sort of economic growth, what generates economic growth, not only are we not likely to see a benefit from these massive tax cuts based on what we know from what's happened in other states and just our own historical evidence, but we know that the state and House are both taking very different approaches to the economic development budget. They're reducing funding for minority economic development programs. Both are taking different approaches to rural economic development. That will have an impact on some of the areas that are really struggling to redefine their job base, redefine and grow jobs for the people in their communities. So,
Brent, I'll ask you about the particulars that Alexandra just laid out. But in general, do you think that if with the tax cut that the budget should remain, that the tax cut should be revenue neutral, or is there an impact to the state by reducing the budget as well as taxes?
It's interesting that the tax reform discussion that's been going on for the last several months revolved around revenue neutrality. Certainly under Senator Rucho's leadership, the expectation was that whatever changes would put in place, the expectation was that it would be a revenue neutral plan. What's been proposed now and passed by the Senate is not revenue neutral. It certainly has some very specific implications for budgets going forward.
Yeah, well, in the House package as well. I mean, again, these are all projections. You can't know exactly what you're going to bring in, but in both cases, the projections show budget cuts over the next several years.
Right? Well, the Senate's got significantly larger built-in budget cuts than does the House.
So what's the overall impact? Because, again, you're not talking about these are cuts to state spending that contribute to economic development, right? That's money that's spent in the state.
I would caution from an economic standpoint, focusing on how much the budget is as a measurement of how committed we are to economic development. I think from a very results-oriented approach, which we use, we were seeing declining economic results even as the budget continued to grow. So I think the political aspects of the budget is a demonstration of both emphasis and philosophy. And I think in addition to the numbers we see in both houses' budget, there's a considerable amount of policy and philosophy and ideology at work there as well. But certainly the Senate budget with the tax proposal that they've approved has much more significant budget implications in terms of lost future revenue.
Well, what are those implications? Is it harmful to the state to have even larger budget cuts as a way of allowing for tax cuts as well?
Well, I think that Senator Berger's explanation was that the cuts that the tax plan from the Senate had were expected to be made up through future growth that would be stimulated by the cuts in income. And that's operating on some theory, and we'll have to see whether that's fully realized. Where the economic harm might lie in the actual reduced state spending, there will be specific economic effects of reduced, say, public employment, but there will be an offset as that money remains in the hands of taxpayers in the state. It's an interesting question, I think. Alexander's brought it up, is tax cuts for large corporations. The money may indeed not be reinvested in the state and would actually leave the state in many cases. So in that case, the reduction that the changes in the tax are not going to contribute to the economy directly, but some of the other cuts will.
Well, you're an economist. I'll throw this phrase marginal utility at you and talk about even wealthy individuals. Certainly national, international corporations cannot be expected to spend too much more here in the state. So very likely their money is leaving the state, the money they save. High-wealth individuals, don't they, roughly speaking, have all the stuff they need and all the food they're going to buy, and this represents a savings to them, which is invested in the 50s and 60s and meant investing in the U.S. economy because it was the robust, that was the best investment in town. These days it means investing in China and India. I'm going to save that money, give it to my broker, and send it to China, not spend it in Wilson.
I think the population you're talking about is symptomatic of one of the misplaced priorities we have as a state, which is focusing on, in economic development, large companies, and then focusing on tax policy, on high net worth, and the expectation that they will have a significant effect in growing the economy. The Rucho plan, to his credit, emphasized the effect it would have in benefiting hundreds of thousands of companies across the state, which is really the foundation of our state's economy and also where our greatest weaknesses have been. The effect of the few hundred companies that we address through economic development policy, the few dozen families who will be affected by the elimination of the estate tax, regardless of how successful large corporate attraction and reduction in taxes are for high net worth, that's too small of a population to move the needle on a state as big as North Carolina's.
You're suggesting maybe, though, that there's something, I want to get back to you in a second, Alexandra, but that there's something in the Rucho plan that we're not talking about. What was it that helped those thousands of smaller businesses and individuals that maybe we're missing that also got lost in this plan as we're focusing on sales tax?
Well, he was focused on reduction in taxes regardless of corporate formation and legal structure. He was quite persuaded by some of the economic analysis that I and my colleagues had done over the last year or more that the true weakness in the state economy was not our inability to attract companies from outside the state. It was the small incremental dampening effects that our complex and in some cases costly tax policy had on decisions made by hundreds of thousands of employers and small businesses and self-employed individuals. And that's where our economy was in decline, not amongst the large companies that everyone competes for.
Well, did those provisions get changed along with the others in what we'll call the Berger plan?
I don't believe they did. I believe that, and as Senator Rucho pointed out in his letter and some of his comments in his resigning from the chairmanship of the Finance Committee, he felt like the proposed Senate plan was not going to help the small businesses that our economy depends on.
Alexandra, let's talk about some of the specifics. You pointed to something earlier, the fact that even if we talk about plans that spend a little bit more money or have small overall spending cuts, Those are based on comparisons to budgets that have been slashed during the recession, much lower than they were before the recession. So we're not even getting back to the point we were in the recession, pre-recession days.
That's right. And certainly pre-recession days weren't that great for many communities in this state. I think it is critical that our policymakers stay focused on job creation. There is overwhelming evidence, however, that tax cuts are not the strategy to get us there. I think certainly we need to be looking at what small businesses need, how we build an environment in which children can be educated for the jobs of the future. We can support entrepreneurs as they innovate. All of that will require investments by the state, along with the private sector joining together to make sure that we have an environment that supports innovation and entrepreneurship.
But Brent was saying that even while we were spending more, we were actually falling behind in terms of real growth, income growth.
Well, right. And I think there's a really simple explanation for that. We've gone through an economic transformation in this state. We've gone from a concentration in manufacturing to a more service sector economy, employment base. That restructuring has made the loss of jobs more significant. It's made it much more difficult for North Carolina to create jobs out of the recession because we have to innovate, find new industries that we can make sure can grow the jobs. So certainly part of the challenge that North Carolina faces is a result of its industry mix, less its tax policy. And tax policy is not going to necessarily fix the industry composition, the fact that we were concentrated in manufacturing. What we need is to make investments in things like the community college system and things like our Commerce Department's efforts to revitalize Main Streets, to think about small business centers and their role in supporting entrepreneurs. Those kinds of investments and a really integrated, thoughtful approach to economic development can, I think, move North Carolina forward in creating the jobs that we need.
And maybe what you're saying is they help not only the people who are going through the system, if you're going to school and you're the parents of school-aged children, but if you're talking about attracting business to the state, that's one of the things businesses look at. You know, Mississippi's got a pretty low tax rate, but I'm not going to send my kids to school there, so maybe North Carolina looks better to me than Mississippi.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. I think North Carolina has long been the sort of jewel of the South. We've been recognized for having a wonderful public university system, a high quality of life with natural resources, with a good infrastructure, a good way for businesses to get connected to markets quickly. All of that has been really critical to the flourishing of certain areas of the state. What we need to do is be thinking about how do we extend that promise across the state. And the best way to do that is through the state budget, because like we talked about earlier, local communities are going to struggle to, especially in low wealth areas of the state, to make up for the losses when the state budget can't support the investments that need to be made there.
What about that, Brent? How important are those investments in things like education and attracting, maybe not the large corporations, manufacturers might not care. They're going to put their plant there and live somewhere else. But for small businesses who you want to build wealth in the community, don't they depend on those that infrastructure?
Frankie, you bring up an important point that's worth reminding not only our legislators but our citizens about. Because tax reform has been such a difficult objective for many generations of politicians, I think in everyone's mind, its importance in our economy has been greatly exaggerated. It's been exaggerated by the conservatives and exaggerated by the progressives. It is neither an economic panacea to grow jobs, but nor is it a panacea on progressive income outcomes. So what we needed to do was reform our tax code so it was more efficient, more transparent, simpler to comply with, more even-handed in its treatment of all types of employers. And the rate was really less important than those characteristics. I'm afraid we haven't achieved that. Because to achieve the other objectives that I think politicians and citizens of any stripe should hold, which is we want our citizens to have a higher standard of living, that is inevitably going to result not from tax code changes, but from wise investments in infrastructure, in public education, in workforce development, quality of life characteristics that make North Carolina not just a good place to move your business, but a wonderful place in which to live and to be employed as well as to employ.
That does require a commitment to some kind of government spending.
Absolutely.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Brent Lane, the Frank Hawkins, he's actually with the Frank Hawkins Keenan Institute of Private Enterprise at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Brent, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Frank.
Alexandra Forter-Sirota is director of the Budget and Tax Center at the North Carolina Justice Center. Alexandra, always a pleasure. Thank you for being here. And Jessica Jones, WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief. Thanks, Jessica.
Thanks.
Coming up, the music of Gene Jolly live on the State of Things. Do stay tuned.